I think I heard the voice of Zephyr Benkash. Is that you, Zephyr?
Hello, yes.
Yeah, I thought I heard you. I would just tell our listeners we're going to speak to Zephyr Benkash, Crescent International, and we're going to be speaking later with Norman Otis Richmond about Malcolm X, and then at the latter part of the show to lawyer David Jacobs about the Magnitsky matter. And, of course, it's Victoria Day, and in French Canada, they are celebrating National Patriots Day. And I guess Victoria is probably not amused. And thank you, Zephyr Benkash, for joining us. By the way, I should ask you, you're originally from Pakistan.
That is correct, yes.
Are they celebrating Victoria Day today?
Over there?
Yeah.
I have no idea, Phil.
I guess I was just wild guess. I think it's unlikely.
I don't think so. I don't think they would do that, though.
Yeah. No. Since we're talking about empires, I figured, having introduced her name, and she looms rather large in Pakistan Indian history.
That's right, yes.
So
yes.
I couldn't resist. But Zephyr, the world watched as Donald Trump, President of the United States, went to the capital, of Saudi Arabia, and he met the king and an army of, they tell us, famous people. By the way, there's no official list as yet. Some people found this kind of odd because Trump had been one of the American politicians who had occasionally popped off about he thought the Saudis are a little bit too rich or a little too crooked, and he wasn't the type of guy to go and bow. Now we've had Bush bow, we had Obama bow, and I saw Trump bow. What did you make of that?
Yes, it was quite fascinating to see all that. As you mentioned, during his election campaign, Trump called the Saudis cowards, and he said that they're getting on the cheap. They really need to pay their own way through. We have been protecting them for far, far too long. And he also said that out of those hijackers, 15 out of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 were Saudi citizens. So he was pretty hostile to the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
But then we find that once he's elected president, and normally American presidents would visit one of the countries in the Americas as their first stop, as Obama did in February of 2009. He came to Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Other presidents have done similar things to basically visit one of the countries nearby before heading out further afield. Whereas Trump went not to Ottawa, not to Mexico, he went all the way to Saudi Arabia, to the Saudi capital. And as I mentioned, during the election campaign, he was very hostile to the Saudis. But here he was, he arrives in Saudi Arabia, and all of this pomp and ceremony and sort of not a word about the Saudis' past behavior. Now they're all friends, etc. But the main thing, I think, was that Trump had come to Saudi Arabia because he wanted to extract money from them. Mm. And he came away with quite a lot of money.
By the way, is it as simple as it sounds? I mean, the Saudis provide cheap oil to the United States, and the U.S. gives them money for that. And then they say, now with that money, you will buy American arms. So the money goes back to the United States in the sale of weapons. Is it? At least that's how it looks. Is that what it is?
Exactly. You see, the price of oil is artificially low at the present time. And this has been kept low. The Saudi officials have actually made no secret about this, that they want to help their American friends. They've said that on numerous occasions. As you know, until 2014, the price of oil was more than $100 a barrel. then it started to slide, and today it's around $50 a barrel. So it's half what it was in 2014, or even less than that. That's one way of the Saudis financing the American economy. Now, even at $50 a barrel, whatever money they get, then the Americans turn around to them and tell them that, well, you buy our weapons. So when Trump went to Saudi Arabia, he signed an arms deal worth $110 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just the beginning, the first part of it. In fact, it was announced by the Saudi foreign minister, Adel Al-Jubeir, that this would go up to $350 billion over one decade. So $110 billion, this is in fact the largest arms deal that the United States has ever signed in history.
Okay.
Now, during Obama's time, he sold weapons worth $115 billion to the Saudis. So you can imagine the amount of weapons that the Saudi regime or the Saudi army has.
Mm-hmm.
But the Saudi army is made up of absolute amateurs. They're totally incompetent. They cannot use these weapons except for using their air force, as they are doing very viciously in Yemen, where they have bombed that poor country since March of 2015. They've killed thousands of people. They've destroyed virtually the entire infrastructure of Yemen. Hospitals have been bombed five, six times, because they just don't want any hospitals, any schools, any factories, anything to be basically standing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the new weapons that the Americans have sold to them, these also would include more weapons, cluster bombs, which are actually forbidden under international law. And Obama had actually refused to supply them, and Trump has just gone ahead and he's going to supply them. And that would also include, of course, American technicians. Because the Saudis can't use all of the weapons themselves, then the Americans would use them for them. And already in the Saudi war on Yemen, America is providing quite a bit of logistic support, refueling of Saudi planes, intelligence information, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that the hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons that the Americans sell to the Saudis are essentially used against other Muslim countries, particularly vulnerable countries like Yemen or in Syria, where these terrorist groups have been unleashed, that are provided ideological and financial support by the Saudi regime in order to overthrow a legitimately elected government in Syria.
Yeah.
So essentially, the Saudis are involved in horrific crimes in the entire region, and America is quite happy to supply them with the wherewithal to continue those crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make the United States complicit in those crimes. And there is just one other point that I want to mention. I'm sure your listeners would know that during the election campaign, Trump had said that he was going to build America's infrastructure, and that was going to cost about $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And so one other aspect of Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia was to get them to pay for some of that infrastructure development. So he came away with the Saudis promising to provide $200 billion for American infrastructure development. So
wow.
You can see that on the one hand, the U.S. is selling them hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons. And on the other hand, Trump got pledges of about $200 billion from the Saudis. Now, we still don't know. The details have to come out as to how much money he has been able to extract from the rulers of the United Arab Emirates, because they were also present there yesterday when Trump spoke to about 55 heads of state from Muslim countries, and also from Qatar and Kuwait. So I believe that probably Trump would be able to gather all of the $1 trillion that he's looking for the infrastructure development of the United States. So all in all, I think Trump would have left that place quite happy without much sort of, you know, concern about what destruction the weapons, et cetera, are going to bring about to some of the countries in the region.
Well, indeed, they aid and abet. In the case of Yemen, U.S. and British air forces provide logistical support, is my understanding.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, if you direct a bomber to his destination and he kills 1,000 people, you are as guilty as the guy who pulled the trigger. We're speaking to Zafar Ben-Gesh, crescent-online.net. Or is it .com or .net?
.net.
.net. Crescent-online.net. And Zafar, I was struck by the odd reporting in the Globe in Mail today. It was all about, now we're getting some cooperation. Trump is moderating his language, talking about Muslims, which there's a separate subject. I couldn't tell the difference between what he used to say and what he was saying in that speech. And that Saudi Arabia is going to become the headquarters of the struggle against terrorists, which hard to swallow. But there was no mention or barely of the fact that he targeted Iran and said, we're all against Iran.
Yes, that was the most bizarre thing to say and do over there. I mean, you know, he inaugurated a center that the Saudis have set up in Riyadh. It's called the Center for Fighting Against Terrorism and Extremism. And, you know, I was really struck by this because Saudi Arabia itself is the incubator of all these terrorists in the region.
Yeah, they should be able to find them. They sign the checks.
Exactly. And so, you know, to open that center over there, I mean, if Trump were really serious, he should have just told them. He said, look, you guys, stop this nonsense. You Saudis, he could have told them. Mm-hmm. Although Trump did say, but in a roundabout way, in his speech, he said that, you know, we are all united together in fighting terrorism and extremism, and, you know, I bring you a message of peace and security, etc. Mm-hmm. But it's a very strange way to bring a message of peace and security when you give somebody hundreds of billions of dollars that they are already killing innocent people in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then he goes around to accuse Iran of all countries of aiding and abetting terrorism. Iran is a victim of terrorism. Iran is perhaps the only country in the region that is fighting against these terrorists and helping the countries that are fighting the terrorists, for instance, in Syria, in mm-hmm. Iraq, in Yemen. In mm-hmm. fact, you know, Trump even accused the Yemeni people that are trying to defend their own country, the Houthis, who are fighting against the Saudi invasion. He accused them of being terrorists. He accused the Hezbollah of being a terrorist organization.
Yes.
In fact, Hezbollah is fighting for its own country, for its own independence. They have not attacked any other country outside Lebanon. They have not attacked anybody in the United States. Mm-hmm. Whereas these terrorist groups, I mean, if Trump were really serious, he could have told the Saudis that, you know, you people had better shape up because you mm-hmm. are the ones that are providing not only financial and logistical support to the terrorists, but more importantly, ideological support to the terrorists. The Saudis finance various madrasas throughout the Muslim world, whether it's in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Indonesia, Malaysia, etc., where they churn out these terrorists that go around on a rampage killing innocent people around the world. And it's the Saudis that finance them. So it was a really, really very bizarre thing to witness over there. And there were, you know, heads of state from 55 Muslim countries that included the Prime Minister of Pakistan, it included the President of Turkey, of Tunisia, of Algeria, you know, Malaysia, etc.
Uh-huh.
All of them were gathered. The only two or three heads of state from the Muslim country that were not invited were Iran, Syria, and Yemen. Yemen, the legitimate government, not the clown mm-hmm. that is hiding in Saudi Arabia, who can't even go to Yemen,
yes.
and he claims to be a president of Yemen.
Yes.
So you can see that...
In the name of peace and reconciliation, he's actually forming it's sort of a classic maneuver to create divisions. And I notice he doesn't say it, but actually this seems to be the long-term plan that we used to hear back 20, 30 years ago, try to get a division in the House of Islam and get Sunnis to fight with Shia.
That's correct. Exactly. That's exactly how he played this out, and that's exactly how the Saudis have been playing it out all along, because the Saudi regime itself, of course, is illegitimate. Virtually everybody in the Muslim world knows that most of the problems in the Muslim world can be traced directly to the Saudi regime because of their, obnoxious way of interpreting things or misinterpreting things.
Yeah. By the way, if I could interrupt, I mean, there is also a terrible distortion. And isn't this playing for Western audiences? The idea that because Mecca and Medina are in Saudi Arabia, somehow that makes the Saud royal family the leaders of Islam. They've never been. There have been meetings, as a matter of fact, of all the major schools which have said that the Wahhabis are barely Muslims.
That is correct. In fact, there was a meeting of leading Islamic scholars from all over the world. It took place in Grozny, the capital of Chechnya, in August of 2016. And this included scholars, about 500 or 600 scholars from all over the Muslim world. The Saudis were not invited to that meeting. They were pointedly kept out, and all of these scholars, including the Sheikh of Al-Azhar, that is considered to be the highest seat of learning in the Sunni world, they said that the Wahhabi ideology is not part of the Sunni Muslims. Obviously, the Wahhabis are not Shias, so if they have never been Shias, and the Sunnis also say that they're not part of us, it actually amounts to the scholars of the Muslim world saying that the Wahhabis are not Muslims. Although they did not say it in those terms, but when they said that they are not part of us, I mean, that's clear enough. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Saudis took great offense at that, but that is the verdict that the scholars from the Muslim world issued. And mm-hmm. the reason why they issued that verdict was because they know that it is this Wahhabi ideology, a totally obscurantist sort of interpretations of Islam that have nothing to do with Islam, that have distorted the message and image of Islam, that have turned or branded or given a very distorted image to Islam as being some kind of...
Have they not acted on that and destroyed sacred sites in the name of this ideology?
Exactly. In Mecca and Medina, there are many, many sacred sites that they have simply destroyed. And as you pointed out, that because Mecca and Medina happen to be located in the Arabian Peninsula, that somehow the Saudis have leadership of the Muslim world. That is simply not the case. True, Mecca and Medina are located there, but the Saudi family actually do not belong to the area that is called the Hejaz, which is where Mecca and Medina are located. The Saudis are from Najd, and Najd is in central Arabia, and that's an area that has absolutely no record of any intellectual contribution to the development of Islam. In fact, throughout history, even at the time of the Prophet, the Najdis used to fight against the Prophet. So they have a very long history of opposing Islam, the emergence of Islam, and the Prophet of Islam. So in that sense, within the Muslim world, as far as the scholars are concerned, they are very clear about the distorted mentality of Wahhabi ideology. But it's just that they are, loaded with petrodollars, hundreds of billions of dollars of them, and they use those to buy influence, or at least buy some regimes and buy some what we call scholars for dollars.
Yes.
That promote their nonsensical views around the world.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of money, and I want to ask just quickly this. I noticed that the figure they had for the purchase of weapons was $110 billion, and at the same time, it's been mentioned that they gave $110 million to Ivanka Trump's little project. It seems to be kind of a symmetry.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you $110 billion. By the way, my daughter has something worth about $110. Somebody must be saying, are we talking 2%, 10%? How much do you want?
Yes.
It suggests some sort of calculation. But I better ask you this in closing. There's been an election in the Islamic Republic, and the Globe and Mail is quite happy today. They say people are dancing in the streets because Mr. Rouhani has been elected. What do you make of the outcome of the election? Where do you have any thoughts about that election?
Sure. You see, look, first of all, the turnout in the elections was 70%, which is absolutely incredible. And the election was held in Iran on the same day that Trump set out to go to Saudi Arabia. And the election results in Iran were announced the same day, which is May the 20th, as Trump landed in Saudi Arabia. I mean, Iran has had presidential elections. This was the 12th presidential election. And Iran had them in a very peaceful, tranquil atmosphere. There was no violence, no rigging, nothing. Absolutely, you know, everything went very, very smoothly. So it shows that as far as Iran is concerned, it has a very thriving democracy. It's based on the rule of law. People are free to exercise their fundamental rights, and they are free to choose whosoever they want. And here was, Trump landing in Saudi Arabia, where if you call for elections, you end up on a chopping block.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, there was not a whisper that Trump made of that.
Yes.
So, you know, those are the kinds of things that you can see, and they are reflective of the American policy.
Yes.
That while they talk about democracy and they are very keen to deliver it through cruise missiles to other countries, but when it comes to, you know, their interest making money and extorting money, then democracy is out of the window.
Yes. Well, the Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. It has been a pleasure talking to you. We really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Phil. Take care.
Yeah. Bye-bye.